Well, hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is the Front Row Network, an NPR Illinois Community Voices podcast, and we have a very special interview here for you today. We are going to be talking to a really just energetic, creative individual who has done so much in his life in not only the world of photography, but also has produced books, has produced a documentary. We're going to be talking today to Michael Greco, and I hope that you check him out after this interview and just learn so much more about him. It was such a fantastic interview. We are just now recording this right after the interview took place, and it was just wonderful. But first, let's introduce ourselves. My name is Craig. I'll be hosting you today. And then I also have with me the editor-in-chief of the Front Row Network, Mr. Jeremy Gechner.
Yes, I've been let out of my editing cage so I can go and actually do an episode of the podcast. I'm happy again. I get to see people.
Yay, especially just over Zoom, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, not in person. Come on, what are we doing here?
And we also have with us the wonderfully talented Aaron McCabe. How are you?
Oh, Craig, you know how to make a girl blush. I'm doing great. I'm excited. I've delved into some of Michael's content, and I'm just really looking forward to sharing it with everybody else, sharing this person and his work and his passion with everyone else.
Absolutely. So a little bit about Michael before we dive in here. He does have a documentary, Naked Ambition. It's an R-rated look at the X-rated film industry, and it talks a lot about the people behind the camera, because that's a story that's not generally told. He also has a book that'll be coming out that's available now for pre-order. It's Punk, Post-Punk, New Wave, and he is, you're going to see so many beautiful photographs in this book of his time in Boston and kind of how he brought his photography and his creativity to that punk scene. And we talk a lot about that in the interview as well. And then also he has so many clients. You probably have heard of a couple of them, and we'll reference them, I'm sure, later on in the interview too. But some of his clients include Ben Stiller, Christy Alley, Kanye West, Steven Spielberg, Chelsea Handler, Chris Rock, Lucy Liu, Will Smith, and Mel Brooks. You know, just a couple of names.
Those are pretty niche names there, man.
But it was a wonderful...
People know these.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a wonderful conversation with Michael, and I hope you enjoy it. We're going to dive right in. Welcome to the show, Michael Greco, and you're on with NPR Illinois' Community Voices, the Front Row Network, and we are so happy to have you. How is the weather out in California?
Weather's not bad. You know, we have what's called June gloom. So the inversion layer from the ocean comes in, and we get cool air and fog in the morning. So, those are our seasons. Our seasons don't go in quarters of the year. They go in morning and afternoon. So it's all good.
Yeah, this might be the only time of the year where maybe our weather in the Midwest sort of matches yours a little bit, where we just have all the humidity right now. So that's what we're dealing with. But we are really happy to talk to you today and to get a little bit about your backstory and your career. And actually, that's exactly where I want to start. We're going to talk about your book coming out in November a little bit later, which I think feeds into your origin story. But I just want to really find out how you came to be a photographer, and then also specifically a photographer for the entertainment industry, and how you came to be in your position today.
Well, I started out as a kid. I went to a summer day camp in Armonk, New York, which is just north of the city. And, I was kind of a geeky kid, hung out in the science shack, and they had a dark room. And I was just mystified by, developing prints and the developer and watching them come out. So I got a camera from the science shack, and I went and photographed the hot counselors in bikinis down by the pool. And then I'd take the film and develop it. And it's like I was sort of hooked. And then I realized there was like something – you know, there were photography was more important than shooting your hot counselors down by the pool in terrible noonday light. I started doing some research and looked up the Time Life photography books, which were a classic series at the time, and looked up, you know, great photographers looking at the work of Avedon and Irving Penn and Hero and Bruce Davidson and, you know, all these phenomenal, you know, fine art photographers, Robert Heineken and Dwayne Michaels. And I got hooked. I was, you know, 13 years old. I was stealing books already from the library because I had an addiction to photography. And, you know, I was hooked. And, you know, when you're into something that much, you think you know it all. So I went to school in Boston for broadcasting and film, thinking you couldn't teach me anything about photography because I just, you know, I'm 18 years old and I know everything already. So I'm sure some of the members of our audience can relate to that when they were 18 years old. So I went to BU and I actually took a photojournalism course and got hooked into photojournalism. I thought it was a very cool way of seeing the world. I grew up in a relatively conservative Italian, you know, protective mother. I was in the city all the time because I grew up just over the city line, and I was born in New York City. But we grew up in suburbia. You know, we didn't do much at the time. So this was like fun. You know, I immediately was going to a factory to do a photojournalism story for my photojournalism class, and then started working for the Associated Press, and I was hanging out with the governor, calling each other Mike Dukakis, you know, and called me Mike. Hi, Mike. And I don't let anyone call me Mike, by the way, so I figured it was okay for him. So it was, you know, it was a passion, and then it was an interesting lifestyle, and I realized, though, photojournalism wasn't my thing, so I was invited to, while I was in Boston, I was asked to be staff at the Boston Herald, and accepted that position. I think I was 23 years old, one of the youngest photographers at the time they had hired. And then while working at the Herald for 4 or 5 years, I outshot on the Carolyn Kennedy wedding and the Maria Shriver wedding, I outshot two photographers for People magazine. So People magazine said, "Hey, would you come work for us?" And it was like the Beverly Hillbillies, you know. I packed up the truck and I moved to Beverly. It was like I actually moved to Venice, California, but you know, I took the invitation immediately. I saw it as a beautiful way to make a transition and make sure, you know, I wanted to move out of Boston. I always felt Boston was a little conservative, socially, you know, a little parochial. And I thought this was a good way to make the transition and get out. So I took it.
That's incredible. I mean, just that your work helped propel you in that direction. It's kind of as you were saying, it's one of those natural ability plus whatever you would have learned in school for photojournalism, being able to marry that and then be able to really do it and kind of go from there. And so we have a bunch of questions about photography in general and your philosophy on photography. And I know Aaron has our first one of those.
All right. I want to add one more thing because you opened the door. You know, the photojournalism part of my life taught me, you know, you're all journalists to a way. It taught me the storytelling, you know, what I learned at BU, the who, what, where, when, and why, right? So, you know, it was part of caption writing. It was part of making sure you had the five W's in the photograph itself. And when I decided I didn't want to be a photojournalist and I wanted to do more magazine covers and celebrity shoots, I took with me, though, that storytelling, those storytelling ideas and translated them from sort of literal storytelling ideas, which you do for the wire service and a newspaper, to more lyrical storytelling ideas, which you would do for a magazine, where you get freedom to build sets and make stuff up and just create what you want. Mm-hmm. So
it's incredible.
Thank you.
I love that. So segueing into your work with celebrities and, you know, with the Time Magazine shoots and everything along that portion of your career, I know in one of your, in your documentary film, Naked Ambition, you're in there quoted as saying it's the connection that makes the great portrait. And so my question is, when you're working with these celebrities or you're doing and you're creating this story through your photography, how do you draw out the connection and how do you draw out the story in the person you're photographing?
Aaron, I first want to thank you for bringing me the $1.99 I get for your rental of the movie.
Yeah, there you go.
So
my husband was like, he called me immediately and said, "What did you rent?" And I'm like, "Don't worry, it's very tasteful."
You should have gotten two rental fees because
we thought we'd make it obvious for all the audiences. It's an R-rated view at an X-rated industry, right?
Exactly.
The subtitle was the... I have a process. I mean, part of that process is usually sitting down with talent and explaining what the day is going to be like. I mean, it actually starts beforehand, either speaking to the talent directly or discussing it with their publicist, what the concept is, what's going to happen. You know, I've had talent hear what we're going to do, and I had Steve Martin call me up. I was on the road on a book tour for, I think, my lighting book, Lighting and the Dramatic Portrait, and I was staying at a friend's house in San Francisco, and I told him, "Steve Martin's going to call me." He's like, "Yeah." and then he intercoms me, "Michael, it's Steve Martin for you," you know? So it's like the creative conversation happens, you know, usually before you get there. He didn't like the idea of me doing his portrait with children's furniture, so we had to immediately adapt. But so there are conversations about what you're going to do that day and what it's going to be about, if it's a clothing and fashionable shoot, or, you know, if that person is going to be in the character of a movie or television show they're doing. That usually, they know what they're going to do. And then when the day starts, though, I sit with them in hair and makeup and walk them through the day, like, you know, like being in kindergarten, like, you know, letting them know what, you know, not that they're immature in any way. It's just feeding that primal thing. It's, you know, to rid one of the anxiety and know what's going to happen, and, you know, and not worry about, you know, what the day is going to be like or how many wardrobe changes. I walk them through all of that. And then, you know, it's a combination of back and forth. It's encouraging them and explaining what you want to do, and then wait for it to happen, or to look for a moment where you're not shooting and capture something, or catching them in between a moment, or, you know, or just setting them up so well that they run with it. I mean, I can build a great set and do all of these great things. I can take a model out into Zabriskie Point in the desert and dress her up in a space outfit, you know, fashionable Gautier space outfit with a helmet and all of this. And if she isn't into it and she doesn't add to it, or the celebrity doesn't add to it, the pictures are dead, you know? So you need that input. It's a communal process. It's a co-artistic process between myself and the celebrity or talent or subject I'm photographing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you, Michael, you've worked with so many amazing talents. You know, just the laundry list is there, like Ben Stiller, Kirstie Alley, Kanye West, Steven Spielberg. You know, Will Smith, and one of my personal favorites, my personal heroes, Mel Brooks. Is there any one of those that really sticks out, or are there any other shoots of yours that really sticks out in your mind as one of your favorites, or a person that you just really, really loved working with? We know we don't play favorites or anything like that, but what are some that really, really just stuck out to you in terms of what you've been accomplishing here?
Well, you know, I've done this over 30 years, so you know, you forget some, and you remember some. I, you know, there are things that are different on every level. It's like, you know, I was close to actors like Rene Russo, you know, for a time, and photographed her a lot, and you know, was invited to her home to shoot, and knew her husband and daughter, and those are just like personal things that are really nice. You know, worked with Will Smith a couple of times, and Will's just such a genius, professional, great guy. You know, did all the book covers for Danica McKellar for her math book, because we had one fashion shoot that she loved, and you know, so those are some personal experiences that are just, you know, nice. I was a family guy. You know, I have three kids, three wives and three kids. So, and they say the third time is the charm. Yeah. So we're
of course.
So, you know, I didn't go out to clubs or party with celebrities or, you know, I took care of kids and did things and traveled and vacations. And so I didn't develop relationships, that were personal with much of the talent that I photographed. You know, that only in one or two instances did I have a personal relationship, like I said, with Danica McKellar and her husband and her son. And, sure. So I don't know if that curtailed, some of the work that I would have had. But it's okay. I mean, I have great kids and, you know, that was just a different experience.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We all three of us have children, so we understand.
Nice. So now we have to ask the inverse of that question. And now this one, you definitely don't have to mention names, but can you talk about what ends up happening that might make a shoot kind of go a bit awry or sort of off the rails? Is that and that idea of what if your talent has a particular vision that they're hoping to achieve? And you have a different vision. Does that ever happen, or does that play out?
Definitely. And it's like, you know, I've had shoots, like I did the cover for Entertainment Weekly of the movie Twister when Twister came out. And I'm trying to remember who the co-star was, Bill Paxton. And, you know, right from the get-go, I was told that Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt don't get along, you know, so I had to photograph them separately, and then they would do 20 minutes together, but I had to make sure I had them separately if we, you know, it was a cover shoot, needed an hour or two for each, because they didn't want to spend a lot of time together. And I had this idea of flying them with a fan through the air. And Stephen Huvane, the very, very famous publicist, Huvane Baumholz, at the time, was like, "Helen's not a physical actress." I'm like, "Does she telepathically?" Now, look, I love Helen Hunt, and she was amazing, and I love Stephen, but it was just such a great line. It's like, does she telepathically communicate her ideas through my mind? Like, what does that mean? So, you know, sometimes ideas get cut right there. And you know, I can tell this story because he's passed away. But, you know, I had to do Rip Torn for Texas Monthly. And I had this idea, you know, a lot of the stuff I do is a reference to historical photography, or it's a play on something, or it's a play on a photograph or a painting. Or so George Harrell, the famous Hollywood photographer, glamour photographer, had this portrait of Jean Harlow on a bear rug. And I thought, wouldn't it be hilarious to put, you know, Rip Torn, old world Hollywood, on the bear rug in a tux with a cigar? And he didn't tell me how much he hated that idea until I got on the Larry Sanders set and he started screaming, "You're making fun of me!" Like, off the chart screaming. And, you know, things like that could make a photographer go in the corner and cry. So, yeah. You know, I've had, you know, and the producers just came to me and said, don't worry about it. He does that every day. So there are definitely those times when you need to be patient, a politician, understanding, you know, and that's part of the job, you know. So,
yeah, and, you know, Erin has some questions for you about the documentary, so I'll let her go with those.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And our audience can find the Naked Ambition documentary on Amazon, right? Amazon.
Yeah.
And
that's how you do it.
Amazon, I believe, YouTube as well. You can buy it on YouTube.
You could buy it through YouTube. Excellent.
Yeah.
I think you can get it on Xbox and a couple of the other services too. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I highly recommend it. And the reason I wanted to ask you about it is because, you know, when we were gearing up for this interview and I was looking up your work and everything, I obviously came across this film that you directed and produced and was kind of like, oh, this is, you know, interesting content. And so I gave it a whirl and I really enjoyed it. And I think I was so, I love trying to find kind of what you were saying, like looking for the story behind the story or the story within the story. And I think that photographers have such an incredible opportunity to do that since you are, I mean, you're doing it through a lens. And so I just wanted to know what compelled you to make a documentary about the Adult Film Awards, because what I saw in that film when I viewed it was you bringing an extreme amount of depth and humanity to an industry that can often be potentially dehumanized. And so I really enjoyed what you were doing and trying to bring out in these people, because that's what they are. They're people.
Thank you. I mean, that whole project had sort of a circuitous route. Wife number two had worked in the television industry, and we were invited to the AVN Awards, the Adult Video News. This magazine did the AVN Adult Video Awards program. It was like the Oscars of porn. I don't know if they still put on the show or not. Again, they must. So,
oh, they do, yeah.
We were invited in like 2001, and I love photographing subcultures. I mean, you know, we could talk about that, about the new book, you know, and you know, a little later on in the interview. But I love photographing subcultures. I've always loved photographing subcultures. And this was like a Fellini movie. You know, this was like the way everyone dressed and, you know, guys wearing tuxes with no shirts and, you know, how do porn stars go to, like, the, you know, the Oscars? You know, it was so colorful and so interesting. I thought this would make a good book. And I looked for a sponsor for a while, and I finally found one. And when we shot over 2 years at the Convention and Video Awards in 2006 and 2007. And I had brought in an old photojournalism teacher of mine that wanted to do B-roll, sort of the behind-the-scenes making of. And those girls and the guys and girls are so, like, open about what they do. It's just matter of fact. And we looked at these interviews, and we looked at first of all, we looked at all the raw footage we had. And then we saw what this old photojournalism teacher had cut. It was like a PBS documentary. And we were like, no, these women, like, what they said is just ridiculous. It's over the top. Like, you know, it's, you know, they're talking about their lives so frankly. So my good friend Charles Holland and myself took over the film and recut it. But it started out as like B-roll behind the scenes to promote the book. Mm-hmm. So it has a little bit of that feel, but it happened because we just got very open and great material from all the women and men that we worked with, you know. So, you know, we were very fortunate with that.
Yeah, those women really, like, such ownership of themselves and their bodies and their work, which I really appreciated. And just watching you, especially in the beginning, work with your team and seeing how you wanted to create connection, how you wanted them to kind of, some of the actors and actresses, like, let down their guard and show, like, who they were, not just the porn star version of them, but like who they were at their core. And then how you capture that through the photography was really incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. That's, you know, it was an interesting project. In the first year, we tried to get enough in 4 days for a book, so we shot as many pictures as possible. And then the second year, we had a totally different attitude. We went in and wanted to shoot five pictures a day, not 25, you know, and really hone in on the interesting things and the stuff that made you know, more compelling to get into, like, people's relationships and conceptualize some of the pictures. And, you know, one of my favorite pictures is a nude of a adult star with just, it's a nude where you see nothing but her side and just her tattoo. And, you know, we were able to concentrate on the lighting and, you know, making the type of pictures that you can when you're not just rushing people in and out of a makeshift studio backstage, either at the event or at, I forget where it was. It was at whatever hotel it was. So the Venetian.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, did you want to talk a bit about social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, Michael, I like social media runs our world nowadays, especially in the light of what the world is going through right now. But I'm very, very just blown away by your Instagram. It is quite prolific. And the shots on there are just so, so amazing there. You know, like everyone on their social media, they're always, you know, looking to try and put their best selves forward. So do you have any tips or tricks that you could like give out to people here about using Instagram and getting the best shots possible?
Well, I mean, I think there are two different things that you're saying. And I think, like, if, you know, members of our audience that are listening, thank you for listening. It's just, I think that, you know, you have to figure out what your Instagram is for, right? Mm. And is it to sell a product? Is it to just promote yourself? For me as a photographer, I keep in mind that I want a balance of personal and promotional, right? So, and I try not to put on my commercial photography there because, you know, that doesn't make sense to me. Instagram is supposed to be about Instagram. It's like, it's supposed to be things you shot with your phone that you, you know, not with your, you know, $3,000 Sony camera. It's supposed to be things that you shot with, your, you know, iPhone. And, you know, it's a lot of when I travel, right? You know, and I use it to document and do some street photography and shoot cool things. And if I go to the Forbidden City, I'm, you know, photographing stuff, and then I'll take it into Snapseed, which is this little app I love, and, you know, do little darkroom work on them quickly. And the only irony is that I mostly start an Instagram post from the Proust book, Remembrance of Things Past, because it takes me months to post them. There's nothing immediate for me about it because I'm busy. I'm running from meetings. I'm, you know, on a shoot. I'm this and that. And, you know, and I'm not there like focused on look at me now. So I go back over the pictures and then it's like, you know, I start it with Remembrance of Things Past. You know, last year I was at the Arl Photo Festival and it's been canceled this year. I'll try to find that news hook tie-in to why I'm bringing it up now.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And if you don't mind, I'd love to ask you before we get into the book that's coming out, but it kind of segues into it a little bit too. But You're a executive producer on the TV series Punk, which takes a great look at like kind of American punk pioneers and a bunch of bands too. Is there anything that you can tell people about that if they haven't seen it? Because it looks so interesting.
It's on the Epix channel. I actually created that show originally, and then the network entertainment got, after my option expired, they got John Varvatos involved. So it took off. It took a little different direction than it was for me.
Okay.
And I'm actually working on something now with a producing team with two producers, which would be a series on photographers specifically, and we think we have the bones of a really great series. But that was good. They used a lot of my photography. The original concept was mine, but I didn't have a lot of creative vestiture in it, just because it sort of got commandeered.
Well, we have a book at least that we can, that we have some control over there, right, Craig?
That's right. So we do, we got to look through the book, that's coming out in November, and it's just remarkable. I mean, we could use that word all day talking about your photography, but you mentioned your study of subcultures, and, you actually say in the intro of this book how much those clubs in Boston really shaped who you are and sort of the appreciation that you have for that punk scene. So definitely people should check that out in November. It's called Punk, Post-Punk, and New Wave. And I'm sure it'll be available wherever books are sold. So you're
able you can pre-order on Amazon now. That's right.
Yes, that is right. It's punk, absolutely.
It's Punk, Post-Punk, New Wave by Michael Greco. That book is sort of the culmination of a lot of things. Because I started as a photojournalist, and I moved into portraiture, and that book's got both. Mm-hmm. Although the portraiture is, very casual backstage, but I really, I like that approach. But it really signified symbolized a part, a really deep part of my life. And it's very much a part of me. There's definitely a rebel inside me, to a certain extent, and that really still loves that music and that subculture and the Sex Pistols and the Clash and the, so I was, if our audience doesn't know, I was working for the Associated Press during the day, and then dealing drugs and hanging out in clubs and just a total club kid hanging out, had my camera, and it was an entry point to a lot of meeting these bands. And I worked for a local fanzine called Boston Rock, and I worked for the K-Rock station in Boston at the time, WBCN. And, I was a hanger-on fanboy, but, I was hanging on with the Clash backstage, and I was hanging on with Billy Idol and hanging out with Billy Idol and doing crazy things with Billy Idol and hanging out backstage with the members of Adam Ant's band and, Merrick and Chris, I believe his name was, the two drummers. And, the camera gave me an entree into something that was part of my life that I was interested in. And it gave me, I guess, a little bit of a status that people, appreciated, me hanging around and invited me to after parties and so on and so forth.
I mean, I think that the pictures in that book are nothing short of incredible.
Yeah.
And I know you said, I think in the foreword just out, there are a lot of those pictures that you have in this book, the world's never seen.
Oh yeah. We were scanning and editing pictures right up until the last moment it went to press.
Wow.
And we've seen the first proof, and there were some pictures that, cause we haven't scanned them or dealt with them, retouched them or color corrected them at all, that we actually went in and wanted to replace because we looked at them again. There's some of it has been published, but a lot of it hasn't. And we, I hired an editor. She went into the files. We did a deep dive edit. we really spent a lot of time looking at stuff. And then once the publisher got involved, you know, one of my, I have an archivist who does a wonderful job, Michael Parker. She, I mean, actually the way the book came about was her telling me, dude, you got to do something with this stuff. Like, you got to do something with this stuff. And it took like 5 years to get a good book deal, and I'm just so grateful to have Abrams Publishing involved and doing a great job with this, with the book. My editor, Garrett, did a great job. I mean, we just had them in the archive. I never showed them to clients. I never used them in my portfolio to get jobs here in L.A. One of the stock agencies I was with had some of them, but they just sat there in the files until, you know, we were like, let's make a project out of this. So it really was fortuitous, and, you know, I'm really grateful to the way it came about. I mean, for those in the audience who know some of the bands, we're actually working on gallery shows now. I've commissioned Peter Prescott and Roger Miller of Mission of Burma to do soundscapes. So when you're in the gallery or museum experience, you'll actually hear like ambient, like David Lynch did this for some of his painting shows, and it blew my mind. So you'd have a speaker, like four speakers sort of in the corner, and when you walk near that area, the sounds change, and it's like, he did these industrial things, kuchung, 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 kuchung. Then you'd hear a train on another one. So they're doing things that are related to the music that I've heard the first part of, and they're just blowing my mind. And we're adding crowd sounds and dissonance, and, you know, but that'll be part of the gallery experience. You know, I also shot video at the time. If I wasn't shooting stills, I shot the first video of the Clash, the Cure in the United States, and the Buzzcocks in 1980, playing the Bradford Ballroom, and the first concert in the United States of the Police. And, you know, I was working one of the first video cameras with some guys I knew from MIT, and so we have video footage, we have stills, you know, we're hoping to finalize some museum projects and really get the project out in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. And these man, these pictures in this book are just so incredible, Michael. And I got to say, though, I'm always fascinated to hear photographers' stance on this, because there's obviously those two big kinds of portraits in here that you said, like the standard portraiture and then the candid shots. The candid shots, especially, I think, in a punk book like this, is just so amazing because it captures all that passion and all that energy. As a photographer, like, and just kind of just as a person, I guess, what's your preference when you're shooting? Do you love to get candids more, or do you like the environment of portraiture?
Well, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. It's a really good question. It was sort of status. Like, it's one thing to be invited to be a hanger-on at a press conference for the Associated Press or at a news event, or it's one thing to do that, but it's another thing to have the Pope say, hey, I'll walk into your studio and take some pictures of me. Yeah. It was like a status thing. And so I thought that to be a more important photographer or a better photographer, people will give you time, and that in itself signifies that they've cooperated with you and you just didn't snap a picture.
Right.
Right? So I thought that was the preferred method. When I moved to LA, though, I had, you know, and coming from a photojournalist background, I had some really savvy picture editors. This woman, Beth Taubner, who used to be at LA Style. There was a very cool magazine called LA Style, and it was very avant-garde and really beautiful and beautifully creative directed and art directed. And she was like, I want you to mix your photojournalistic style with your portraiture. And it you know, one of my first assignments was a series of images, either in the late 80s or early 90s, of John Singleton that I shot with a plastic camera. I shot with a Holga plastic camera. And they were very gritty and journalistic, and they were very raw. And, you know, and I, looking back at this work, there's something to be said for both, and there's something to be said for you know, doing that those portraits on location, in between, you know. I mean, I'd love to travel with a band again and have full access and do the modern-day version of, you know, punk, post-punk, new wave.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I would buy that book in a heartbeat, too, so get on it.
All right, working on it.
I had a couple of questions when I was scrolling your social media feed, like you were like we were talking about Instagram, and I, a couple of days ago I was looking too. And so you mentioned the Forbidden City, and you do have a lot of photography, besides your portraits on your Instagram feed, of art from Forbidden City. Can you talk about that? It seems like there's some definite love.
Well, like I said, most of my Instagram feed is me traveling.
Yeah.
So I try not to just put on the stuff I shot commercially. We will sometimes, we'll do it to like, when we did the website, we did like 80 days to a new website. Of course, the website didn't get finished for like another year after that, but
of course,
we're just wrapping up the search engine optimization on it now.
Yeah.
But most of my Instagram stuff is traveling, and you know, the Forbidden City was just an amazing place to photograph. It's just, you know, it's just rich with really graphic, you know, amazing, you know, the scale of it was just amazing. But you know, every trip I do, if I go to a museum, I go to museums a lot when I travel, and I will shoot like, you know, interesting tableaus or things I see, you know, the Museum of Modern Art in Chicago with the multicolored windows and then the video art underneath it, or I don't know if that's posted yet, but it will be posted soon. When I travel, particularly when I'm home and I'm on a shoot, you know, or if not, I'm in the office producing and putting deals together and, you know, working on this documentary series or the book, or you know, reaching out to galleries. So when I'm home, I'm at home. You know, when I'm not shooting, I'm at home, and that doesn't make for great Instagram. But it's mostly when I'm out and I'm traveling. And you know, until this year, I do about 110,000 miles in the air, and this year already in January and February, like the first 3 weeks of February, I did 45,000 miles. So,
Wow. Yeah,
so it's mostly when I'm traveling, and that's why the Forbidden City, I had a show in Beijing of my work at a gallery, and I was there for a week, and one of the last days, and we went to the Forbidden City to check it out, so.
Now, so this is a really interesting time, right? Because we're obviously all in this pandemic world, but can you speak to how that's changed? Because you just mentioned so much traveling that you do. And also, I imagine that shoots are have been shut down for a good deal of time. What have you been up to recently to kind of keep those creative juices still flowing?
You know, I'm an entrepreneur at the same time as a photographer. So as an artist, I like to be both right-brained and left-brained, and I've got a million projects going. Some of them I could talk about, some of them I can't. You know, I'm working on two potential startups. I've got, you know, I had a tequila brand come to me to do a shoot, and then they asked me about celebrities, so we're trying to put a deal together. Like, I'm very entrepreneurial, and I think photographers need to be these days, because, you know, what's the social media is great and cell phone cameras are great, but it's also led to a lack of respect for fine photography. It's cut budgets because, you know, advertising budgets have gone to social media, and it's ephemeral compared to, you know, a double page spread in Vanity Fair or Vogue, where the ad buy would be $150,000 a page, and it was there for a month, and it had to, like, knock your socks off. Now it's like, hey, go out and take some pictures with cell phone camera, and we, you know, we really can't pay you, you know. So I, you know, I think that as much as now there's a lot of photography and there's a lot of things around and there's a lot, there are fewer and fewer well-paying jobs, and I think that, you know, I'm at a point in my career where I'm just trying to be as creative in all aspects of my life as possible. So I've got three or four ventures going on. My wife and I run a company that defends photographers' copyrights and seeks remuneration for their work being stolen. We have a bunch of stuff, and I'm just going nonstop every day, whether I'm shooting or not. So
as we begin to sort of wrap up here, do you have any advice for people that are starting out in photography? My wife, for example, has been doing graphic design for about a decade or more, and now she is really getting into going the DSLR route, getting the lenses, things like that, and really starting to do that more so than even just a hobby, kind of trying to get into that more professional realm with it. Do you have advice for people that are starting out, or is it more you just have to learn by experience?
There's several routes for people to learn. I came up through the photojournalism, work at a newspaper, get that experience, learn from your colleagues at the newspaper, you know, the wire service. That was one way. People assist. They assist professional photographers, and they assist photographers they admire and whose work they admire, and that's another route. You could be self-taught. Your wife's in a good position because she can convince her clients that she can do the photography to the things she's designing. So that's already a foot in the door. That's a good one and a solid one. And from a business standpoint, you're really strategic. It's really, you know, it's a good way to do things. In general, I just think the market is really, really tough. You know, like we were talking about before, there are classic market issues. There's a glut of people because the technology has enabled everyone to be a photographer. Even if you take a bad picture, you can now fix it in Photoshop. So there's a glut of supply and lack of high-paying, high-end demand. So it's just an interesting time, and I think anyone who wants to be successful has to have just perseverance. You just have to persevere. You have to, in any business, you have to learn to, you know, not to take no for an answer. You have to figure out, you have to problem solve continuously to, you know, if this didn't work and person didn't answer me, what do I do next? Do I send them a chocolate with a box of my photographs? Like, you know, it's like figuring out how to get in the door, figuring out how to solve problems on set or with talent or when you have a screaming celebrity. You know, it's like that's the great thing about a photography career for me, is it taught you to deal with so many different situations, and it made you have to figure out a solution. And I've taken that and translated that into business. You know, it's like when I'm part of the team, I realize I'm the facilitator and I'm always the one moving a project forward, you know. So that comes from being the director or photographer on set. And that sort of perseverance and stick-to-itiveness is the only thing a photographer right now. I wouldn't say it's the only thing they need, but they need it big to succeed in this, you know, in this photography world right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Erin, you had a question?
I did. I just want to say, too, before I ask this, like, in all of your answers and in our discussions and then viewing your book that's coming out this fall and watching the documentary and everything, and even your Instagram feed, like, it's very clear your passion and commitment to this art form. So that being said, who would you, if you had the opportunity to photograph in the world, either living or past, would you want to photograph and why?
I mean, it would be interesting to photograph the photographers that inspired me, I think, you know, now that you brought it up. I've never thought about that.
Wow.
I never photographed Michelle Pfeiffer, so I would have liked to have shot Michelle Pfeiffer in the height of her career. But it would have been amazing to photograph Avedon, would have been amazing to photograph Helmut Newton, you know, people who really inspired me for their amazing work. Avedon in particular, I think was a genius, and it would have been just very, very powerful to be able to meet him and connect with him and things like
that. Love that.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day and speaking with us. And this was so enlightening. We mentioned that the documentary Naked Ambition is available for streaming right now. You can rent it on YouTube, Amazon, I'm assuming iTunes as well. And then also you have the book coming out this fall, Punk, Post-Punk, and New Wave. And is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we wrap up here?
No, I mean, I really want to thank the audience for listening. And, you know, if anyone wants to see more of my work, it's on my website, which is Michael Greco, GRECCO.com. MichaelGreco.com. And that's it. You know, thank you all. You have very nice questions, and you watched my movie. So impressed.
That's what we do here at the Front Row Network. We watch movies.
Yeah, that's what we do.
I'm working on this documentary series, and I'm downstairs during the day watching, you know, a couple of documentaries I really like the Defiant ones on HBO, and it's like, well, I'm still working.
Exactly.
Research.
I'm working.
Well, we will have to review that documentary series when it comes out for sure. So thank you again so much, and it was just a blast having you today.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you to your audience, and thank you all.
What a wonderful conversation. I just absolutely loved everything that he was talking about. You can tell his passion. Aaron, you mentioned his passion towards the end there. What's your reaction to getting to talk to Michael today?
It just reinforced what I felt like I was getting from the documentary Naked Ambition, of just, he is a person that through his gifts and his talents and work, you can see how much he appreciates humanity, the art of humanity, like just how human beings are art to him. He's a gem. And I think I think the world could benefit from listening and seeing things through his eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fascinating. He gave us a bit of his life story, but also throughout the arc of his story is definitely that love of creativity and that passion for photography and capturing people on just kind of a different level. It's just great. It was a wonderful conversation. So glad we got to speak to him. Jeremy, what are some of your thoughts?
Yeah, well, to me, like what you guys are all saying with his passion and such bubbling through, but he sent us an advanced copy of the book, and I got to tell you guys, if you are into any of this kind of stuff, it's amazing, the pictures that are in this and the stories that the pictures tell of just this wave. Because, you know, when I was younger, I was so into punk music and into that scene, you know, as much as you can be in, you know, Southern Illinois. The visceralness of some of these pictures just perfectly encapsulates what that whole mindset, what that whole lifestyle is about. And you can just tell that even from a very young age that he's just got this eye for capturing the moment, and that's just kind of parlayed into his whole career there. So, I mean, I love talking with him about the book and just his philosophy on photography.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I could talk to him all day about photography. And honestly, I am extremely, I'm not talented at all. photography. I am that guy that he was talking about with the cell phone, trying to be really cool with it.
Yeah.
And thinking it's really neat that Apple gives us the ability to do a portrait now. But still, just a wealth of knowledge and just so much passion. So just a wonderful conversation. Thank you, Michael, for allowing us to have a moment with you and talk to you. If you'd like to follow the show more, you can find us on nprillinois.org. You can also follow us on social media at the Front Row Network. You can find us just about on every platform. We need to really pick up that Instagram game after speaking to him today. We definitely need to get back on that. And, you know, I'm just going to talk quickly about my show. We've had some incredible interviews over on Beyond the Mouse. Even if you're not necessarily a Disney fanatic, I think you would find some interesting takeaways. We've interviewed Kevin Lima, the director of A Goofy Movie and Enchanted. We've interviewed Floyd Norman, who is a Disney legend animator. We've interviewed Bob Gurr, who was an Imagineer, another Disney legend. And we will be having an interview coming out very shortly with Leslie Iwerks, who is an Academy Award nominee herself, but also the granddaughter of Ub Iwerks, who created Mickey Mouse. So just been an incredible couple of months here for us. So I'd love you to check out Beyond the Mouse as well. So I think that's it for me. Anybody have anything else to wrap up?
I'll just tell you right now, just more coming out after this. It's going to be the start of Hamilton Week coming up here on the Front Row Network. Can't imagine why. Maybe a film dropping on Disney Plus. But yeah, they're going to be having that. And then just want to draw people's attention also coming up. The very first episode of Convince Me with Larry Smith with his special guest Kyle Fields is going to be coming up in the next week as well. So make sure you go to the Front Row Network pages and anywhere you can find us like that on NPR Illinois as well. And just keep going, because we just keep cranking out the content, people. And what else do you have to do? Nothing. That's right.
That is right. That is right. Well, thank you so much for listening. For the Front Row Network, I am Craig.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Erin.
And we will see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.